Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What up, what up, what up? What is up, everyone? This is the Backwards K Baseball Podcast. I'm struggling here today. it's been a long day already, so I'm on the struggle bus. But thank you guys so much for tuning in to this fourth episode of, again, the Backwards K Baseball Podcast. I am Chris Asbrock, and I'm your host, and I'm joined tonight, as always, by Scott Kaiser. Scott, my man, how you doing, buddy?
What's up, my man? We are just days away from opening day. I am pumped. Let's go.
Dude, it could not get here soon enough. Like, it's hit the point where, I mean, the last couple, you know, I'd say week and a half of, you know, of spring training, I'm like, I'm done. Like,
yeah.
Give me real baseball.
Every time you hit that kind of end of spring lull, and it doesn't help when they start regular season games and then try to double back and do more spring training. So it's like, oh, we started and we're done. Oh,
and we're starting. That's it. Exactly. That's the worst part about it, man. You get that little tease there for, you know, you got a week and a half, you got to wait. But yeah, so we have another, we got another packed show again here today. I mean, you want to really get into it? I mean, you have anything else you really want to add, or?
Nah, man, let's go on ahead and lead things off with some news and notes, my man. Go ahead.
Let's do it. All righty. Well, so right, if you remember last week towards the end of the show, Scott was literally talking about the San Francisco Giants. News broke that Blake Snell had signed with the San Francisco Giants. So literally we broke news in the middle of it, which was actually pretty cool. It's the first time I've ever been a part of that in my podcast career. So, you know, I felt kind of cool doing that. But, you know, I mean, in terms of the Snell signing, I mean, his market was really, I mean, it wasn't much. He was, to me, he was asking for way too much money. Obviously, that is the majority of the, you know, of it all is Scott Boras on that one. But once again, overvaluing his client, and then he ends up signing a two-year deal or just over $50 million with the San Francisco Giants. And, I mean, it's a good landing spot for Snell. You know, the Giants do need starting pitching, but, you know, this is something that I don't really, you know, I'm kind of stunned by. But again, when you overprice yourself, you really tune a lot of teams out, and that seemed to be the case here for Snell. Scott, I know you touched on it a little bit last week, but what are your thoughts, you know, as we go into, you know, now the opening week here of the Blake Snell signing?
You know, I'm glad that Blake Snell finally decided he wanted to play baseball and finally decided that he was good enough to grace the league with his presence again. You know, he won the Cy Young, so I suppose he's earned his spot in both the American League and National League. But overall, I'm not a huge Snell guy. You know, good for the Giants, I guess. Good for the, you know, their spot in the National League. I'm just happy that we're close to the games being played, and hopefully he makes it worth their while and worth everybody else's time for making him have to wait. It was nice to see Scott Boras take one on the chin. Yet another one of his clients who signed late, settled for way less than he was looking for, and basically got a one-year deal out of the whole thing. I mean, you said it last week, Blake Snell, play ball or don't. But you're not really going to be able to hold anybody hostage because the clock was ticking. And there sits his mate, I guess you could say, as far as his client mate with Jordan Montgomery, still waiting to find a home. So I guess he's better off than him. But look, these guys, the Scott Boras clients, at some point, their value has been shown throughout the offseason on multiple occasions. Teams have drawn a line in the sand and refused to blink until they finally got an offer or a deal that they felt okay with. And both Snell and the case in, up there in Chicago with Cody Bellinger, they both basically had to eat their hat, take a one-year deal. If they perform well, they'll be back next year. But it's a reminder that you overplay your hand in this game of trying to sign a deal with these guys. Everybody's got StatCast now. Everybody's got analytics. Everybody knows who these guys are, what they bring to the table, what deficiencies they have. And Boris can't go in here and bully teams into overpaying by just looking at the back of the baseball card. So glad he's in. Don't really care what, that he had to lose on the money side. And hopefully, I'm neutral towards the Giants. So hopefully it works out for them.
See, I hate the Giants, so I kind of hope they fall flat on their face. But in terms of Jordan Montgomery now, this is – it came out, I want to say it was this past weekend, Jim Bowden had said that apparently now Jordan Montgomery has a few – or I'm rephrase that – multiple multi-year deals on the table now for him. So that's interesting, and let's be real – that was going to be the case no matter what. Jordan Montgomery, I think, is a better pitcher than Blake Snell. If I had my choice, I would choose Jordan Montgomery. He proved it when it mattered most last year. Like I said last week on the show, without Jordan Montgomery, Rangers don't win the World Series. Plain and simple. Now you're looking at his market and what teams are really going to really have to step up now, and where does he fit best? I mean, in terms of Jordan Montgomery, what three teams do you think he best suits moving forward?
I don't really have a – he's one of those guys who kind of could fit anywhere. Anybody that has playoff aspirations, as you mentioned, he proved that he can step up in the biggest games when the lights are brightest. So if you're a playoff team, I think he could fit on any of those teams. But even if you're a team kind of on the cusp or looking to kind of speed up the rebuild just a little bit or looking ahead with a younger staff, and he could be a stabilizing veteran presence, I think Jordan Montgomery could fit just about any team in the league at the moment.
I completely agree. And I know this morning, I want to say it was on MLB Network Radio, I was listening, and Steve Phillips had mentioned three teams, and it was kind of the Yankees, obviously, because right now they're in need of starting pitching. Mm-hmm. You've got Nestor Cortez, who's the other
Well, Carlos Rodon?
Yeah, Carlos Rodon. Yeah, I mean, I kept saying Sean Manaea in my head, but I'm like, that's not right. Yeah, with Carlos Rodon, you don't know what you're going to get from him. And who knows how long Gerrit Cole is going to be on the shelf. And Marcus Stroman, I mean, I don't know what to expect from him.
Well, at this point in his career, he's a number three starter at best. So.
Exactly. So in that rotation, I mean, he's a number two. I mean, depending on what you get from Nestor Cortez, I mean, and obviously when Gerrit Cole comes back, I mean, if Cole comes in and he's perfectly good, obviously he's your ace. Would you slide in Montgomery over Nestor Cortez, or it's, flip-flop two and three? You can't go wrong there. Baltimore was a team that Steve Phillips had mentioned, which I thought was pretty interesting as well. They've got pitching, but they do have injuries, though. So adding a Jordan Montgomery to that staff, whew, man. That would instantly stabilize, a staff with Corbin Burns and Grayson Rodriguez as your top two right there. And then you add Jordan Montgomery to that, count me in. And another one he mentioned was, you're going to hate it, but the Philadelphia Phillies.
Their name has been brought up a few times over the course of the offseason. And again, any team that has any type of playoff aspirations would be a good landing spot. So Philadelphia's name coming up in that conversation, they always like a good deal, especially when these guys fall back into a price. I mean, if they're not ultra aggressive coming out of the gates, they've been known. I mean, look, Bryce Harper signed in the middle of March when he finally decided where he was going to stay or, play for the long term. So Philly has a history of waiting until they get the right dollar amount or waiting out these guys until they decide they finally want to sign on the dotted line. So I could see him going to Philadelphia, Personally, I sure as fuck hope not, but it's a destination that would work for, it would work for them, but I personally would rather have him go back to the AL if it's up to me.
Yeah, I've still said all along Texas is, I mean, the ideal spot for him, but it doesn't appear that's going to be the case. But another signing real quick before we move on, JD Martinez lands with the New York Mets. This was another Boris client that took forever to sign. And, man, I mean, he signs a one-year deal with New York for, I want to say it was $12 million. I mean, good for the Mets. That's a good signing, but I don't know really what – I mean, that's going to shore up your DH position for him. So, I mean, but who knows in that division. Good luck with them. But, I mean – personally, I would have put JD Martinez on a few other teams as opposed to the Mets, but, you know, he's finally signed. So that's another, you know, it's another big guy down and leaving, like I said, Jordan Montgomery is really the only one that is left. Scott, what are your thoughts on JD Martinez finally signing?
It's an interesting signing for the Mets, yeah, who are kind of in a weird middle spot. They spent all the money last year. Things kind of fell apart. They ended up shipping out Verlander and DeGrom. And then you look at this year, still spending, you know, a lot of money because they're paying some guys to not even be there. So their salary is still way up there. And, you know, at this point in his career, JD Martinez is kind of long in the tooth. I'm not saying that he can't help the Mets. Again, he would be a good fit on a lot of contenders if you need a DH. But I don't know how much he's got left in the tank. And the Dodgers decided they'd move on from him after having him last year. And don't get me wrong, JD Martinez had a very solid year last year when he was healthy. He was on pace to hit a crazy amount of RBIs and home runs. So he had a really good season, but it seems like an odd fit for New York unless they're planning on, you know, doing what some of the smaller market teams do when they seemingly sign a guy that doesn't really fit in long-term plans and they plan to flip him at the deadline. I could see a situation like that, yeah, where they're just looking to get prospect capital for having signed him. And $12 million, obviously a bargain considering you had Justin Turner sign up in Toronto for $13 million, what, 2 months ago? So, you know, I guess the price was right for the Mets. And if it works out, they flip them and get a pick, or, you know, they get some prospects back. If not, $12 million for a JD Martinez isn't going to set you back too much. So it's a curious signing, but I suppose the Mets have some type of plan. But then again, it's the Mets, so they're probably they're probably floundering as we speak.
I was going to say they'll fumble it anyway. So, but no, I mean, for the Mets, so it's going to be a battle in that division anyway. So they are, you know, best case scenario, they're looking at a wild card. But if they have any sort of slow start to this season, yeah, look for JD to be dealt, you know, at or near the deadline, because again, bringing back prospects, you know what you're going to get from JD. So
yeah, Matt Barr is a Mets fan, and he says Danny Burgers was the DH for most of last year. JD is an absolute upgrade, but I'm not sure to what end. That's kind of what we're touching on, where, yeah, it's just like you don't really see the forest through the trees on this one, and unless they're planning on competing somehow, which I don't think they have the starting pitching to do this year. That's really the Mets' problem. On paper, their offense isn't too bad. The Mets team as a whole isn't terrible, but their starting pitching is going to be pretty awful. So exactly, it's not going to be able to carry them. And then they play in the same division as the Phillies and the Braves, so they're behind the eight ball there. Look, any team could play to above their capacity, and a team with a payroll that much, you would expect that if they get the highest outcome for all of the guys that are making top dollar, they would be able to compete and stay right there in the division. But realistically, without starting pitching, I don't see how it works. So, like I said, I can understand signing him with the intent of flipping him later on, but I don't know how much it changes the overall outlook for the Mets.
Completely agree. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I mean, it's when you are, you know, spinning your wheels like we have seen the Mets do the last couple seasons, you're kind of getting the same vibe again, without the pitching. I mean, you're going to, I mean, they're going to score some runs, but if you're scoring, you know, for example, 10, but you're giving up 11, what good does that do? So that's going to be the Mets' problem, you know, as this season unfolds. But like I said, any slow start to this season is going to be an absolute nightmare for them. And then, you know, expect some more moves to be made, you know, as, you know, as the summer really kicks into full gear. So, again, that's like you were saying, Scott, it's a very interesting signing. One that, again, the Mets, you could see with a plan moving forward. If it works out, great. If not, yeah, they'll flip them and, you know, nothing hurt. So there you go. But, well, I think it's time to move on to one of the weirdest
stories we've seen in a while that broke what the day after we were on last week was it last week that this thing kind of all came into focus.
Dude, this is one of the biggest shit shows I have ever seen in my entire life. One that is, I mean, in all serious, you know, we joke about it, but this is a pretty serious, I mean, if this goes sideways, I mean, this could get really, you know, pretty bad. But we're talking about Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, who was fired by the Dodgers for, I mean, it's, we've seen basically
about 42 different stories.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's the problem is we've seen, you know, two wire transfers from Ohtani's account totaling $1 million. Then there's theft involved or alleged in the amount of $3.5 million to cover gambling debts. Oh, man. This is crazy. And looking at the story here by Tisha Thompson, who is she writes for ESPN. She was the one who really kind of broke it. This guy, as we've seen, Ipe Mizuhara, he's been Shohei Ohtani's longtime interpreter friend forever. They've been, you know, together for a few years now, and he's been the one at the center of this, where Ohtani had allegedly wired two wires in the amount of $500,000 each, so totaling $1 million to help cover gambling debt that was to a bookie. I had his name, now I can't remember his name here off the top of my head. Matthew Boyer, who is a Southern California bookmaker, where gambling is illegal in California, so that's why you're going through the bookies here. So this is, I mean, there's so much to this that, you know, it's really something to where you kind of really can't, you know, you can't jump to any conclusions by any means because nothing has really come out, but you've got the feds involved.
Tell Twitter that. Well, Twitter's been a feeding frenzy since
it's been unbelievable. I mean, an absolute gong show. But, I mean, like I said, you've got the feds involved, so the FBI is involved in this. You've got Major League Baseball investigating it. I mean, you name
after it. After Major League Baseball came out and said that they weren't going to do an investigation, I feel like public pressure forced their hand on that.
Oh, they had to, yeah.
Story breaks. It almost immediately changes. In fact, I think it had changed by the time I heard the news. The story was already changing from Ohtani's camp that, no, he had no idea what was going on, that this money was stolen. He was a victim of theft. Then we later find out that he didn't know anything about it until a Pepe joint had addressed the Dodgers while they're in Seoul. It's a nightmare. It's been one thing after another. I have no idea what to believe. My instinct tells me that the first story that came out that Pepe told was that, you know, he was getting his gambling debts covered by Ohtani and he was just being helped out. And the reason Ohtani did it himself was because he didn't want to, you know, he didn't want Pepe to gamble the money away. And then all of a sudden that story changed when I'm guessing Ohtani's lawyer said, wait a minute. He can still be implicated just from transferring the money. That's not what happened. And so then the story changed. He didn't have anything to do with it. It's been a wild ride. And about an hour or so ago, Ohtani actually finally spoke on the situations, didn't take any questions. And I didn't get to see the full extent of what he had said, but basically reaffirmed that he was totally in the dark and that he was a victim of theft, had no idea this was going on. And that's, I guess, the version that he's sticking to for this afternoon. I don't even know anymore. I have no idea what to believe. So we're kind of left just to guess because he's not taking questions and things have changed so many times. So I hope that Major League Baseball does an actual legit investigation and they're not just winking and nodding at this whole thing because it's pretty damn serious. And for the people who are pounding their fist on the table saying, you know, you ban Pete Rose for doing something similar. If I gotta say, if Ohtani did have anything to do with the gambling or whatnot, he should be punished just as harshly. Like it's very clearly stated that you can't gamble on baseball, and we don't know that he gambled on baseball at all. The what things were gambled on by whoever gambled them on are outside the realm of baseball. So hopefully that never comes to pass, or we never find out that either one of them bet on baseball. But should it get to that dark of a place, we could be looking at Ohtani being banned from baseball forever, which is shocking to think that this time last week you go from not thinking anything other than, hey, we're getting ready to start, you're gonna see Ohtani in a Dodgers uniform for first official game that counts, and then the shoe drops. So it's all very interesting, confusing, and I'm hoping for the best because Ohtani is the face of the game right now. He's the biggest name in the sport. And if he does end up going down, it would be yet another black eye for baseball after they've taken quite a few over the last couple decades between the steroid era and everything that they went through with that, the labor negotiations that have been contentious over the last 20 or so years. It's just baseball after the season that they had last year where people were excited about the game and more people watched than it had in a very long time. This is the last thing they need.
Yeah, like this simply cannot happen. I mean, it cannot happen. As soon as I heard it, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, it never fails. And it's almost like baseball can't get out of their own way. Even though, I mean, I'm not going to say this is baseball's fault. But, you know, this is, again, this is something really serious. And I really do hope that Ohtani was completely in the dark, you know, about it all. That would be best case scenario. But like I heard on the radio this morning, when your best case scenario is the top star of the game is, you know, is in the dark to all of it. And he's, you know, had millions of dollars stolen from him. That's pretty bad, you know, and that's, I mean, but that's just the way it is right now.
Yeah, I know the best case scenario right now is that he was just ignorant of his own finances, which it doesn't paint him in a very good picture. It makes him look willfully ignorant that he was having him handle his money or however, you know, that his interpreter had access to his funds. That's the best case scenario, and that's not great, Bob. So and yeah. Matt agreeing, saying, you know, when the best case scenario is ignorance, that's rough. Like, yeah, it absolutely is.
1,000%. I mean, it's like if you read, you know, if you read a lot of the stuff from actual trusted, you know, journalists and not, you know, the internet, you know, that's, you know, you'll see a bunch of stuff I've seen written by, like I said, you know, legit journalists talking to, you know, and everybody that they have interviewed. I mean, Ohtani's one that he is in the dark on a lot of stuff is what it sounds like. And that's what I'm hoping for because the dude eats, sleeps, and drinks and everything baseball. And that's kind of, you know, the preliminary reports coming out from what they've said, it doesn't sound like anything was, like nothing was bet on baseball. So I'm like, well, that's good from the stories that I've read, again, from, you know, credible journalists and everything like that. It was never bet on baseball. So I'm like, okay, well, that's, you know, that's one thing that's good. But again, if we're, you know, like, you know, reiterating, ignorance is your best case scenario. This, you know, I mean, there's so much really that's still going to unfold here coming up over the next, oh God, days, weeks, I mean, hell, even months, depending on what, you know, what happens here. So, oh man. Yeah.
Well, and I hate that on the, you know, basically the eve more or less
of a new season beginning, that this dark cloud is what's overshadowing kind of the whole thing. Because we know that it was talked about during the Soul Games, you know, during the broadcast, surrounding the broadcast. That's all anybody want to talk about. You get a week removed from that, and there's still going to be the conversation surrounding it once, you know, everybody else gets in there to play. So rather than focusing on baseball and everybody getting back in there and start of new year and all the excitement that comes with it, we're having to sit here and deal with questions about something that has nothing to do with the game itself. And like I said, with Snell and anybody else out there, nobody's bigger than the game, not even Ohtani. So if Ohtani, you know, did do something wrong, and it turns out it did, you kick him out and never look back. And it'll be unfortunate. It'll be sad because I love Ohtani. I love watching him play. He's been great for the game since he came in. But if he broke the rules, I'm sorry, my man. You got to go just like anybody else in the same situation. I'm just glad he doesn't play for the Braves.
I mean, fair enough.
The only time I'll say in my life that thank God Shohei Ohtani doesn't play for the Braves right now. I got enough to worry about trying to get back, trying to beat the damn Phillies in the first round of the playoffs. I don't need this type of shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, good Lord. Now, good night. I mean, if
Rex nothing in saying that if this had happened 20 years ago and it happened to Jeter, then baseball would have been done. I don't know about that because, like I said, nobody's bigger than the game. And at the end of the day, fuck Jeets. But it would have been just a big of a black eye. You never want somebody who's a prominent figure to go down on something like this. It's one thing when a Wander Franco has something wild happened to him off the field that has nothing to do with the game, and he's not a household name or face like that. You can kind of just ignore it and push it over there if you're at Major League Baseball and fall on, yo, the laws handle it, and we got nothing to do with it. He's out of the game, and we'll deal with it later. But with Ohtani, you kind of can't just ignore it. No, you can't ignore one of the most unique players that's ever played the game of baseball and succeeded at a level that few have ever even come close to. So it's a struggle. I mean, when I can look up at the TVs at work and see one of the first things that the national morning news is talking about is the Ohtani situation, you know it's serious because they're not breaking in on Good Morning America or spending time on the Today Show to talk about baseball if it's just the games and highlights. So it's become bigger than baseball, and that's not what baseball wants.
Exactly, and especially when this involves one of the most recognizable athletes on the planet. I mean, he's up there with Messi and Ronaldo in terms of global, you know, recognition. And again, this is not what baseball needs. Hopefully, like, you know, we keep reiterating, hopefully, you know, I don't want to say it gets swept under the rug because, I mean, if wrongdoing was done, then obviously it needs to be taken care of. But
Major League Baseball will be glad to sleep it under the rug.
Oh, no. They're sleep under. Oh, Manfred will be like, oh, yeah, we're good. Yeah, there's nothing going on here. Oh, turn the other way. Yeah. Hey, look, we got baseball on the field. That's exactly how, I mean.
Like saying that, thanking Shohei because people are finally paying attention to baseball again. No, this is the type of attention we want paid.
Yeah. Though. That's exactly what we're, you know, striving for in terms of attention. So, yeah.
Rex wondering if they have these type of scandals in international leagues. I mean, I'd imagine it just.
I know in soccer they do. Yes.
Right. You're just not very aware of it because it doesn't affect things on a bigger level. Like if you're in that world, yeah. I mean, remember, people still think Jordan gambled on baseball and was suspended. Or on basketball, rather, and that part of the reason he left and retired is because he had a gambling problem, and it was the NBA's way of hiding that situation and hiding a suspension was for him to say that he was retiring to go play baseball. So it happens across all of the different sports.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see the NFL, I mean, they you know, smacked down Calvin Ridley for gambling, you know, so again, this is something that, you know, could turn into a lot more
Jared, in very much the spirit of the show, $1 billion just to get swept by Arizona again.
Jared gets it.
Jared's a Diamondbacks fan, so.
He gets it.
He is not upset to have heard this news.
I love it. Yeah, well, I mean, hey, that's, I mean, good old Dodgers, man. I'm telling you what, they.
The way it goes. But speaking of the Dodgers and Ohtani, can we talk about actual baseball? You want to talk about
it? You know what? Yeah, screw it. Let's do actual baseball, for God's sakes. Jesus. I mean, man. Well, overseas is where they start in the MLB Seoul Series in South Korea, where the Dodgers and Padres faced off in a two-game series. The first is actually turned out, you know, with a split. The Dodgers took game one, 5-2, while the Padres took game two, 15-11, and two completely different games. The first one was a pitcher's duel. I thought it was a pretty fun game to watch. It was kind of nice driving to work and watching the game on my phone as I'm driving. I was slightly distracted, but yeah. Being able to watch baseball at 6 a.m. is pretty legit. But, I mean, this was, you know, the first game, like I said, it was kind of nice to see real baseball in front of 952 at the, is it Gochok Sky Dome in Seoul, South Korea. So that was game one. Man, Scott, what did you think? Again, obviously we saw real baseball, but what were your thoughts on some of the performances that we saw? Because I've got a couple things highlighted for this game. So tell us your thoughts on it.
I enjoyed that it was baseball that counted. But at the same time, when they do this and they start the season and then try to go back to spring training, it always just kind of feels like a kind of dress rehearsal. It still doesn't quite feel like the same thing. And the managers and teams and players all seem to treat it like they're just doing another spring training game and it happens to count. So the play seems a little bit off. The pitchers are still pulled relatively early on. They're not getting stretched out any further than they would be if they were, you know, still in an actual spring training game. So the results are a little bit skewed. You know, again, it's like watching a glorified spring training game that counts. I enjoy it because it's baseball, but it also feels different than any other type of regular season game. Now, the atmosphere seemed good. You know, that was nice to see. It was much more lively than any type of spring training atmosphere that you'll see because it did count. And it's exciting for South Korea to be able to witness Major League Baseball played in front of them and attend those games. Lots of fans there, lots of baseball that goes on within Korea in the KBO. So, you know, it's nice to see, but at the same time, it feels like this false start when you're talking about the actual season. And when the games are played come Thursday, nobody's going to remember that the Padres and Dodgers are actually 1-1, except for when you look at the standings online.
I mean, both games featured really good pitching matchups, and those were ones we talked about last week previewing these games. But, you know, this first game, Tyler Glasnow makes his debut for the Dodgers, and Yu Darvish, you know, who is a staple, it seems like, in major league rotations. And, you know, Darvish goes, 3 2/3, gave up two hits, one run, wasn't earned. He walked three, struck out three. He threw 72 pitches through those 3 2/3. Glass now goes five. He gave up two hits, two runs, both earned. He struck out three, walked four. He threw 77 pitches. So, I mean, overall, I mean, again, good numbers for the starters. And, I mean, nothing much you can really say. It was nice seeing Betts, who started off, he was 2-for-4. He did knock in a run. And Shohei goes 2-for-5. He did knock in a run as well. But overall, I mean, Xander Bogaerts was the only other one for the Padres that really made any noise. He was 2-for-4, and he had an RBI. Other than that, it was a pretty slow game, but it was, I mean, again, pitching matchup-wise, it was nice to see. And I thought, because at this point of the year, the hitters are usually going to be ahead of the pitchers anyway, just simply because, well –
It's funny that you say that, because back in the day,
I was going to say it's kind
of we're ahead of the hitters when at this time of year, just because the hitters don't have their timing back. But yeah, it seems to have kind of
flipped
a little bit over the last decade or so, where the pitchers really don't. Because I mean, when we were growing up, pitchers would be ready to go open at 9 on opening day. Now it feels like. But they get amped up to their full workload, which tends to be about 6 innings these days, and they don't even hit that till end of April. Like these games that we're going to see over the next couple of days, it will surprise a lot of people if anybody goes longer than six innings in a lot of these starts. Like the pitchers don't get stressed out. They don't stress out their bodies in spring training. They don't push themselves until the regular season starts. And on one hand, I get it. But on the other hand, it's like, what's the point of spring training if they're not going to do that? We might as well just start the regular season games a week after these guys show up at camp.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you look at this game here, this was a 2-1 game all the way until the 8th inning. And then it just, I mean, it went sideways for the, you know, for the Padres. You know, relievers gave up, I mean, 4 runs in the top of the 8th. I mean, you had Betts with a single, you know, an RBI single. Ohtani with an RBI single. You know, Gavin Lux, he ended up getting a hit. And that was kind of, you know, that was kind of nice for him. Or no, he was 0-for-5. He was on a fielder's choice. Just kidding. But other than that, I mean, like I said, at this point, this is such a – it's such a weird situation going overseas – and then coming back. So you're in the middle of your spring training to immediately kick it back, you know, kicking into gear, only to decelerate and then kick it back into gear again. So very tough for, you know, for the Dodgers and Padres players. You know, the boost is the atmosphere and everything like that.
Mike chiming in to say that they should make it just a spring training game and don't tell the people in Seoul because they'll never know.
I mean, I can't argue that. I mean,
although Matt says that baseball's huge in Korea, like we mentioned, and the KBO games are fun to go to, and he was at one when he was overseas. And he also mentions that the velocity that they're throwing early on in the season is part of what they're doing. And I had Chris Bassett last week mention that, you know, the human body just isn't meant to throw harder than 93, 94, and that's why we're seeing all these injuries. And that's fine. But again, I'm just referring to the fact that I wish that they, whatever level they need to get to for the season, I wish they were actually there once the season started, instead of we're going to see over the next week that's still kind of occurring, where guys are only going to be limited to about 70 or 80 pitches a start. Sometimes that means you're not going to see guys get out of the third or fourth inning, and if they get into a jam. So it's just kind of frustrating to see back in the day where guys would come out, throw a complete game shutout on opening day, and you were off and raring to go with the next guy ready to do the same thing the next day if needed. You know, so it's fine. It's great. It's still baseball, but I do miss the pitchers being more ahead than they are now.
Yeah. And like I said, it recently flip-flopped, like you said, probably within the last decade, to where, you know, it's just these batters have been, you know, doing so much, you know, in the offseason, everything like that, to get everything caught back up. And then the pitchers, you know, with all the science and stuff like that in terms of taking care of their bodies. And it's just, it's a lot crazier than what it has been. And, you know, now you're seeing, you know, like we said, the batters have really started to kind of take that jump over the pitchers. And that was definitely the case in game 2, because my God, the Dodgers $300 million pitcher got his teeth kicked in his Dodgers debut. And I mean, kicked in. Yoshinobu Yamamoto manages to go only an inning, gave up 4 hits, 5 runs, all 5 earned. He walked 1, struck out 2. So there was at least that. He did strike out 2.
I got no problem reminding folks that his ERA is 45 come Thursday. So there's that. After his 1 inning of work, his ERA to start the season in his career is 45, y'all. Take it in.
I mean, literally, $300 million to pitch an inning and get absolutely clapped all over the ballpark in South Korea. I mean, that is not the way you envisioned your Dodger debut going, but you know, this was a game literally where, I mean, you saw he was greeted rudely by the Padres batters. You had the scoring summary, you know, Cronenworth tripled. He tripled. Ha-Sung Kim hit a sac fly. Capusano doubled. Wade singled. That was it. So that ended up being, you know, multiple guys scoring. This was just, I mean, a nightmare for Yamamoto, who, again, towards the end of his spring training, did not look very strong. And, I mean, it showed.
Yeah, no, I mean, you heard people kind of speculating a few things. What Matt kind of alludes to it, that Japanese fastballs don't translate to Major League Baseball. Seen it from every pitcher. Kodai Sengeling's on the forkball for a reason. But, and there is something to that to a certain degree. The ball is different, you know, so they're having to get used to that. They're getting used to being in a different country. So there's that. There's all sorts of language barriers. You're getting used to that. I understand all that. And then they're on, but on top of that, we were hearing the excuses and when the spring training games were going on and he was out there that, well, you know, Gavin Lux played bad defense and he was the victim of, you know, balls finding holes and all this. And he'll be fine when the lights turn on and yada, yada, yada. Well, maybe that's not the case. And I was expecting there to be, you know, a transition period and that he wasn't just going to walk in and dominate from day one. But it's got to be just a tad bit concerning if you're the Dodgers that he didn't even make it out of the first inning. I mean, I'm not saying that they're freaking out or that they're having buyer's remorse, but there still just has to be a twinge of, we sure hope he gets that fixed, you know, heading to the next start. And maybe it was all just nerves, maybe playing overseas, you know, to start the career and not in LA, but that just means that he gets to do this twice because when he has his American soil debut, it's not going to get any easier when they flash that up, when they flash up on the big board that his ERA is 45. That's not what a Dodgers fan signed up for. So if he was feeling the jitters in that first start, then get ready, buddy, because they're going to be twice as hard. So I'm curious to see how things play out. And I think overall he'll be fine. But it was definitely not the start that you're looking for if you're the Dodgers.
Yeah, that was, like I said, absolute nightmare situation. I mean, it looked good for the Padres in terms of, you know, their top four. Bogarts, Tatis, Cronenworth, and Machado all were very, you know, had a very successful game too. See, Bogarts 2-for-5. Fernando Tatis 2-for-4. Cronenworth 4-for-4. So he looked, I mean, the good old Crone zone there. And Manny Machado hit an absolute piss missile on his. He hit one of the two home runs in that game. That was almost a 400-foot shot. That was in the ninth inning. Yeah, top of the ninth. So it was good seeing that from the, you know, from the Padres. Also, you include Jackson Merrill, their top prospect, who is young as all get out. You know, he comes in there and he gets his first two hits of his career. He goes 2-for-5. Tyler Wade, he chips in, he goes 2-for-3. Luis Capusano goes 3-for-6. So a lot of their guys, they're guys that they're going to be relying on the rest of this year, showed up in game, you know, in the second game. The one that didn't, and it was kind of, you know, I don't want to say alarming, but you would expect a little more, was Ha-Sung Kim, who returned to, you know, his home country and the place, you know, the stadium where he played. Prior to coming over, he went hitless in both, you know, in both games. So that's a bummer for him. You wanted to see him, you know, go back over to Korea and light it up. And unfortunately, he didn't get it done. But, you know, overall for the Padres, they have to be, you know, coming out of game one where, you know, outside of one bad inning, which we say in baseball, you know, you have to avoid the bad inning. Well, in this game, there was a lot of bad innings, but overall, the Padres were able to overcome that. This is something you can really build on, you know, going into, you know, this weekend series coming up, which we're going to touch on here in a little bit. But
can you, though, or was it just like, hey, that was great, and then we got to go back to spring training? there's not a whole lot of momentum to build on. It was, I'm sure, again, that the Padres were pleased that they were able to win the second game, put up some runs, and see –
the different team that they're now, like, gone as Juan Soto and moved on as some of the other guys, Blake Snell. And so they're coming in with the unknown of some of the guys that they've put in those spots to fill those roles. So I'm sure that they're thrilled that it looked better than it did in the first game. But again, I don't know how much you're able to tell about your team on the whole, because this game, both games were managed very differently than you're going to see starting this week. So,
no, you're right. But I still think there's momentum that can be had from that. And I think that's what, you know, you're playing your arch rival and their big new shiny toy in Yamamoto, and you knock him out after the first inning, and you don't give up after, you know, you have a big lead, piss it away, and that doesn't stop you. You know, you come back and you tack on another like three runs or something like that after, you know, they make it close. Yeah, I think there's a lot to there's definite momentum to be had from that. I know you're going back to spring training again.
If they get shellacked on Thursday, you're going to revisit.
If they get their shit kicked in, then that doesn't matter. Then forget everything I'm saying.
There's no momentum.
Yeah, then just forget this part even happened. We'll cut this out. But I mean, seriously, I think that there is momentum that, you know, they can take from it. I really do.
Well, you had the first game that was more of a pitcher's duel, not quite, but more of a pitcher's game. And the second game that featured all of the offense and seemingly nobody could stop the hitters from doing what they want. So Rex asked the question, do you prefer a pitcher's duel or a hitting slugfest in a game? Which do you prefer? I'll let you answer that question first.
Pitcher's duel. In all seriousness, in my years, my years of coaching high school baseball, I will say the greatest game I've ever been a part of was a game where there was one hit total. Our pitcher threw a no-hitter, and we lost 1-0. And it was the best game I've ever been a part of. It was awesome. And, again, both pitchers were, absolutely dealing. We gave up, I want to say it was like a couple errors we had, and then a sack fly. But we got, you know, we threw a no-hitter. We had one hit, and we still lost, you know, 1-0. And that, the kids, I'll never forget, after the game, they were like, oh, man, you know, we're like, what are you talking about? The game lasted under an hour. I mean, I know it's high school baseball, but I was like, dude, this is literally, like, you can't be upset about it. That was a phenomenal game to be a part of. Yeah, everyone loves the, you know, the runs and, you know, like, the slugfest. I mean, I get it. That's fun to be a part of as well, but there's something about a pitcher's duel that there's so much more that goes into it in terms of having to adjust to a pitcher, you know, and everything like that. And what comes, you know, in terms of the coaching side of how to, approach the opposing team when your pitcher's on a roll. It's a lot more fun dealing with that than what it is in a slugfest, where it's just like, you know, every time, you know, you're constantly seeing your pitcher get lit up. I mean, that can be a little frustrating, but on the offensive side, it's fun as hell, you know, smacking them all over the place and scoring all these runs. But, you know, in all seriousness, though, to me, pitcher's duel is where it's at.
I'm going to just kind of steal Matt Barr's comment here, because he says that a slugfest for a live game and a pitcher's duel for TV. And yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. Because when you're at the ballpark, you're sitting there, you know, you're doing whatever, eating, drinking, but you're there to be entertained, have a good time. And a lot of times you're sitting out in the sun or, you know, whatever it may be. You'd rather see action on the field. No, watching a pitcher's duel in person is, as much as I love baseball, gets to be a little tedious and kind of boring. But on TV, I absolutely want to watch the chess match. Watching a pitcher's duel is my preferred way. Like, gun to my head, if I have to choose one.
I know, you were on the fence that entire damn question. Like, dude.
I would rather see a pitcher's duel. But, again, okay. if you're in person, though, like, nobody wants to watch pitchers just, like, striking people out constantly. So that's... I don't know. It's a tough question to answer when you're talking about in person versus watching it on TV. Because, yeah, TV. I know people that do not like sitting through pitchers' duels, no matter what the situation. But I'm a sucker for a good pitcher's duel. It is fun to watch two pitchers go back and forth and just carve out bonus points if, you know, the teams are supposed to be crushing. If the offenses are supposed to be really good and none of them can break through, then you know that it's 100% that both pitchers are on their game, and the best pitchers can beat the best hitters on any given day. And that's fun to witness. So, yeah, I'll go pitcher's duel.
Yeah. And seeing that, well, that's one thing that I'm going to harken back to the, the momentum part of it. You know, we saw in game two, the slugfest here, the Dodgers lineup is absolutely ridiculous. And the Padres outslugged them in that, in that game. That's where I'm saying, I think the momentum can be carried on, but there were two different types of games, outside of, game one was really a pitcher's duel outside of the eighth inning. I mean, that was, like I said, a 2-1 game, really, until, the eighth when the, Dodgers tacked on four. And then you had your slugfest. So you really had the best of both worlds. You know, if you're a baseball fan, whichever one you liked, you got to see both of them. So, again, it felt good to have baseball back, period. So that was kind of nice, regardless of what teams were playing and, what the scores were. So I think – should we move on to our World Series picks, or what do you want to go to next?
Let's go on ahead and talk about the upcoming matchups. I think we'll round out the show with who we ultimately, because last week we broke down the National League. Week before that, we gave our AL breakdown, and this week we'll go on ahead and put our nuts out there and incorrectly pick the final two for the World Series matchup and who will walk away with that Commissioner's Trophy come this October.
Okay, I like that.
Are there any games that stand out in your mind on this opening slate that don't involve the Reds?
Yes. Well, there's eight series total, seven if you, exclude the Reds, that really stand out to me. So let's kind of, the first – you've got I'm not going to name the ones that matter the most for me right now, but these are the opening series matchups here. We've got the Brewers taking on the Mets, the Angels taking on the Orioles. You have the Braves taking on Philadelphia. Obviously, the Reds host the Nationals. Padres host the Giants. Cardinals travel out west to take on the Dodgers. Tampa Bay hosts the Toronto Blue Jays. Minnesota heads to Kansas City. The Tigers and White Sox. You have the Pirates traveling to Miami to face the Marlins. Yankees, Astros. Cubs travel to take on the defending World Series champs, the Rangers. Guardians head out west to take on Oakland. Colorado takes on Arizona. And finally, wrapping it up with the Red Sox and the Mariners. So those are the 15 series that start on Thursday. For the first time, we have all 30 teams in action, which is pretty awesome on opening day. So, again, out of this, there's seven series that I really have highlighted. Only a couple really, I would say, outside of, the Braves-Phillies, which is going to be, what a way to start.
Hell yeah.
Spencer Strider taking on, you got Strider versus Wheeler. I mean, what a matchup on opening day. I mean, that's a primo matchup there. Another series I've got is the Giants and Padres. So you're going to have, Logan Webb taking on to be determined. So the Padres have yet to, announce their starter there. Another one, the Cardinals and Dodgers. That's one. I mean, the Cardinals are, we've said they're going to be, they're old. They've got Miles Michaelis starting, for him as Sonny Gray is on the DL. To start the year, or the IL, I should say. But he's taking on Tyler Glasnow. Blue Jays and Rays is a fun one to watch, as you're going to have Jose Berrios taking on Zach Eflin. That's one to watch. Yankees Astros, I think, is anytime those two teams match up, because that's a budding rivalry. You got Nestor Cortes taking on Framber Valdez, so that's one to watch. Cubs and Rangers, just because I would just want to see what both teams are. The Cubs, there's some hype behind them this year. I don't really know what to expect. I picked them second in the NL Central, behind the Reds. Rangers, World Series hangover. What are we going to get from them? Who knows? And then I've got, you know, the Twins and Royals, the battle in the AL Central. As you're going to see, Nicky Lopez taking on Cole Reagans, who...
You mean Pablo Lopez?
Who did I say? Nicky Lopez?
Nicky Lopez is plays shortstop.
Yeah.
White Sox.
Jesus Christ. I mean, what is wrong with me? Dude.
First time, long time over here.
Oh, my God. I told you. It's been a long day, dude. What'd I tell you? Told you all along, man.
Funny enough, I mean, obviously, I'll be locked in once the Braves-Phillies matchup starts. But the matchup that piques my interest the most is that Twins-Royals game because you've got Pablo Lopez going up against Reagans. Is Reagans the real deal like we saw down the stretch last year? Can Pablo Lopez repeat his, you know, amazing performance after moving over from the Marlins to the Twins last year?
What about Nicky Lopez? What about him? Let's see what he does.
Well, Nicky Lopez will be starting. And Matt Barr asked the question of most surprising guy getting the ball for the opening day. And for me, it's hands down Garrett Crochet, who will be making his major league debut as well as the season opener for the Chicago White Sox. So I don't think it gets much more surprising and shocking than something that's only happened a handful of times in major league history. Garrett Crochet, the starter for the White Sox on opening day to face the Tigers. I'm curious to see how that goes for him. That could be another one and done type Yamamoto situation if things get too much for Garrett Crochet there. But I am curious to see how that goes. I mean, you highlighted a couple other matchups. You know, there's one that I'm looking at. Aren't you focused on that Rockies Diamondbacks game? Come on, your boy. Your boy's getting the ball on opening day, hey, man. Come on. Hey.
Yeah.
Tell me about Kyle Freeland, man. Come on. Is this the year?
I'm representing MSM here, MSM Sports. So my buddy, I knew we were going to be talking about Kyle Freeland. Yes. Kyle Freeland is, I mean, I know you and I, we go back and forth on that one, but – you know, the lefty, the dude, he knows how to pitch in Colorado. And I think now, granted, he's up against Zach Gallen. So that's, you know, and that Diamondbacks lineup is disgusting too. So, but I mean, in all seriousness, though, I Kyle Freeland, man, if he's on his game, he's a great, I mean, he's a really good pitcher. I mean, he really is. And that's something that is going to be interesting for, you know, for the Rockies because they need him. They need their pitching to really step up. And I said that last week in the, you know, in the preview of the Rockies and the NL West, it's all comes down to pitching. And Kyle's been there. He started opening day numerous times for him. So, you know, a guy who keeps the ball down, if he's got his changeup working, you know, good on him. And, you know, he could really throw off the, you know, the Diamondbacks lineup, which is, you know, obviously what I'm hoping to see. But, you know, if you watch the World Baseball Classic, Kyle had a really good, you know, he had a good performance with Team USA. So hopefully he can carry that into the, you know, into the regular season there and we'll see what we got. But, you know, in terms to, you know, real quick to go back and answer Matt's question, the Frankie Montas, that's another one. Cause I think that might be a little more shocking than what you're going to see with Garrett Crochet because what do the White Sox have? You know what I'm saying? Like, Dylan Cease was their guy. They dished him away. So, you know.
I mean, but they've got guys who have started opening day and could take the ball if you weren't going to thrust a rookie making his major league debut out there on the mound. I mean, it's curious. I mean, I'm intrigued to see how it goes and hearing all the historical numbers and factoids about how many times it's actually happened in baseball is one of those like, oh, wow, this is even more rare than I actually imagined. So just from that aspect, it's got my curiosity. But let's be real. If Major League Baseball teams want to just throw somebody out there to the Wolves on opening day because they don't have a quote-unquote ace or any guy that, you know, could fit the bill otherwise, they could have easily started Garrett Crochet in game two just so it wasn't open today. But hey, if they believe in the kid and think he can get it done, then why the hell not go out there and have fun?
Don't Yamamoto it is what I would tell him as he walked out of the dugout. No pressure, kid. Don't Yamamoto it.
I know. Give a little smack on the butt and say, hey, don't Yamamoto it, kid. Oh, thanks, Mike, coach.
Mike saying, and this was another game that kind of interests me for different reasons, but he's looking at the Guardians A series because new manager Stephen Vogt for the Guardians there taking over for Terry Francona after he was there for so long. And then the A's on the other side, which is where he spent most of his career. And I mean, it's the A's. It's the last season in Oakland, maybe. I don't know. Does anybody know before Oakland gives him the boot? I'm more interested to see what Shane Bieber has. Last year, he had that issue with, you know, having a partially torn UCL, or he had inflammation in his forearm. That kind of subsided, but he never really seemed right through the rest of the year. Definitely wasn't up to the standard that he set for himself. But all this offseason, you know, he's a tick up in spring training. He went to Driveline, which is the new I'm in the best shape of my life. So he worked out, you know, there and seemingly has gotten back to being the guy that we used to know. And I doubt that he's ever going to be at the height of his powers anymore, but it would be nice to see Bieber come out on opening day, and it's a soft landing spot there in Oakland, come out and show a little bit. He's also on my fantasy team, so I wouldn't be mad about that. No vested interest here.
I've got zero desire to watch any of that series. I just don't. I mean,
remember when I was a true baseball fan.
I mean, are you freaking kidding me? You ass. I mean,
you don't want to stay up late and tune in to Guardians A's at 10 o'clock at night?
I'm not watching that game. There's two other games I'd rather watch. Colorado and Arizona, and then the Red Sox and Mariners. Screw the Guardians and A's, man. Seriously?
Hey, come on, man. Get them all on at the same time.
I'm a real baseball fan. Eat shit, dude. Dude, come on. I mean, we're not going to go there. You're going to shit on me for not watching Guardians A's? Really?
Hey, I would, but I got to be to work a couple hours after start, so I'll
be
asleep.
That's a great excuse. I had to sleep. Yeah. Come on.
Our resident Cleveland fan Rex says that that's the only game that matters. So yeah, I know one person who will be watching it.
Yeah. Because we know there's going to be three people in Oakland watching it, so there's that. But yeah.
Ooh, Rex with a throwdown saying that the Guardians are actually the only Ohio team that matters. What do you feel about that?
I'm just going to be nice. I'm not going to sit there and shit on, you know, on listeners of the show. I'm not going to do it. Rex, I mean, I appreciate your input, but you're wrong.
Bar pointing out that I got you to lose your religion over there and start cursing. I hope your mom's not watching.
Dude, you should hear me on a daily basis. I mean, this is nothing. Scott, you know.
Getting you worked up. I gotta let him know. He's not all professional. He's not as calm as he appears to be.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes. I just try to keep it classy for the show.
It's easy to poke the bear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've got a fuse that's very short. We'll go with that. We'll definitely
Is there anything else that you're looking for, excited about on opening day? I mean, opening day for me, in all seriousness, I can watch any of the games, and I tend to catch a little bit of them all just because I'm so happy that baseball's on TV. Now, when the Braves start, I'll be locked in from the minute the first pitch until the final one. But before that, I'll peek in on some games. After that, I'll check some things out before I get to bed. And it's such a great day, opening day.
No, it really is. Yeah,
it has such a feel for me, and I still it takes me back to my childhood, getting racing home to be able to watch all the games and catch everything that had happened and that was still to come. There's nothing like opening day.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, especially here in Cincinnati, that is the, you know, that is the epitome of opening day. I mean, if you're in this area and you've never been down to opening day, oh my God, check it out. I mean, I'm going to say I'm obviously super biased, but yeah, nobody does it better than Cincinnati when it comes to opening day. I mean, it's really a phenomenal event, just overall top to bottom, just the atmosphere. It's awesome. And I mean, I'll tune into Brewers Mets to start it off. I could care less about either team, but I'll be watching. And then on, you know, when at 3:05, when the Braves Phillies comes on, I can promise you that's the game, you know, out of all of them aside from the Reds, that's the one I'm really intrigued by, because that is literally a heavyweight fight to start the season off. I mean, you can't ask for much more in terms of an opening series than Braves Phillies.
You don't have to say anything else to get me fired up. The last game the Braves played that counted was a loss to the Phillies in Philadelphia. So
yeah, you got your shit kicked in. Enjoy.
Whoa. Shit kicked in. No.
You did. Did you win or lose that series? Did you or did you not?
But you did. Getting your shit kicked in, there's a little bit more of a definition to that when it comes to the final score. Either way, I guess
did
I should
you
take...
or did you not?
You know what? I will defer to the Reds fan who would know about getting his shit kicked in. You're right. We got our shit kicked in. Just like you've done for the last,
That's my life. That is my life. I don't care. I don't give a damn. I don't care.
You sound
if it wasn't for my team, the Colorado Avalanche, I would be a miserable, and I repeat, miserable sports fan. Colorado has saved me. Since, you know, I was, my God, 13 years old.
Mike telling me I'm uncalled for, which I'm sorry, Mike. You just had to catch a stray on that one. It was nothing personal. I'm just trying to give Christian. I don't have anything against the Reds. Those who know me know how I get down. The Reds are fine living here. I'm happy to live in a National League city. Even if the DH is taken over, National League ball is still the official league of baseball, period.
Yes. Now we're starting to move forward here. There we go.
Speaking the same language.
Yes. Now we're talking here.
Can we get a Pepe in here to translate for us? I heard he needs a job. Maybe we can afford him.
Hey, come on, Ipe. Come on in here, my man. Jesus. We need to bring him in for our betting segment. That's what we need to do.
I don't do the betting. And betting, betting on baseball, I've found, is the fool's error. I can watch the baseball in the world, and not one time can I predict the correct winner in a baseball game. It's absurd.
I suck at sports betting, so I've got zero room to talk. I give up. I just piss money away. It's stupid. I hate it. I do. I hate it. So overall, I mean, outside of obviously your Braves, what series are you really, like, you know, appointment viewing?
I mean, like I said, I have interest in the Tigers and White Sox because of Crochet. I did pick the Tigers to win the Central, so I'm interested to see how they come out. Hope they come out quickly. And again, mentioned it before, but the Twins Royals, that pitching matchup between Pablo Lopez, a.k.a. Nicky, and Reagan's that's the other one that I have my eye on is one that I will sit down and make sure I catch. It starts an hour after the Braves game, so I don't know how much I'll save it live, but I'll have my phone tuned into it to make sure I can see what's going on.
Oh, good. I mean, God forbid you ever screw up. I mean, Jesus Christ.
No, I was just trying to say, I mean, a.k.a. Nicky Lopez, there's nothing wrong with that.
You're such a dick. You are such a dick. God. I mean, it is just – I get one name wrong here, man. I mean, it's – ride me.
I almost let it slide, but that's not how I roll.
You know, the worst part is I said it, and I'm like, that's not right. But I was like, I'm too deep into it now, and I'm like, I know he doesn't play for him. But I was like, then I started thinking, I was like, who the hell does he play for? And then I'm like, I just have no clue. And like I said, I've had, you know, it's been a long day, and I don't feel like dealing with your bullshit is really what it comes down to. So this is not a good episode for this here. I mean, let's be real.
Well, before we get too far off the rails, do you want to give your World Series picks? Who do you have coming out of the AL?
I got the Houston Astros. I think overall they are just, I mean, they're too strong.
Going chalk in March. All right. I like it. Go ahead.
I mean, honestly, there's really no other way to go. No other team has what they have right now at this point in time. I mean, Texas, they didn't do enough. They've got too many injuries in terms of the pitching staff. Oh, you're laughing. What the hell is going on?
I'm sorry, the comment section, Mike pointing out that you're learning a valuable lesson. Scott will pounce on every mistake always and forever.
That is, you know.
And Matt saying that you're sick of my shit and you're electric.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, man. Yeah. Good shit. So take a deep breath. Take a deep breath.
Take a deep breath. Here we go.
Recollect your thoughts. You were talking about the Astros. Go ahead.
Since I'm going chalk here in March already, it's March 25th, and we're going right down the track. Jesus. No, but in all seriousness, though, I mean, the Astros, they are the strongest team. I mean, I think, you know, what they have coming, you know, in terms of the pitching staff, because like I said, you got Lance McCullers, who's set to come back in the middle of the season. That's almost like a trade deadline acquisition when he comes back. You got Justin Verlander set to come back. The dude could be 77 years old, and he's still going to go out there and sling it. So he's going to be coming back in a couple weeks on top of what they have already. I mean, and then adding Josh Hader to the back end of that bullpen, I just think, you know, what they have with a strong lineup, and they've been there. And that's where I just don't see any other team outside of, you know, Baltimore, who is young and talented, but they haven't been, you know, through the trenches like Houston has. You know,
get out of my head, my man, because I was like, I'm bored. I'm bored of hearing the Astros and them being the ones. Last year, Texas knocked them off. It's time to have some fun. I'm going with the Orioles.
That's what I want. Believe me, I don't want Houston at all.
I was just gonna say, but, and I don't think that you do want Houston.
No, I don't.
I think that the Corbin Burns move, and a move that we have not seen happen, I think that the Orioles are going to push in their chips come trade deadline, possibly before, whether it be Jordan Montgomery or they go to make one more move to push them over the edge. I think that the Orioles find a way to sneak into the World Series. And I'm going to say that the Astros don't even make it to the championship series this time. This time they come up short of that. It's time for them to start knowing what it's like to come up a little bit short in the playoffs.
Are you saying that as a hater or like legit? Because I'm getting hater vibes from it. That's what I'm saying.
No, I truth be told, I don't have the animosity or angst towards the Astros like everybody else. The banging on the trash cans thing, it happened. They were punished. Yeah. It's so far in the rearview mirror. And I just know, baseball being what it is, guys look for an edge all the time. The Astros were stupid enough to get caught. They took their punishment. It happened. They have since won a World Series, a legit one, which is more than I can say for the Dodgers, who only have the COVID one on their ledger since 1985. and so I don't have any angst against the Astros. Hell,
okay.
They allowed us to win another World Series championship with all their gracefulness. So, no, I just think that at some point that the whole thing kind of runs, I guess. And I think we saw the first crack in their empire last year by losing to Texas in a series that everybody just assumed that they were going to put away and walk right into the World Series. I just think that it's time for somebody else to take the next step. And I, looking at the landscape of the American League, the only team that I can see doing it is the young, up and coming, don't know any better Orioles.
Can I say, can I add, I mean, I know, but if I'm just trying to think of a way that I'm going to say this without you shitting all over me.
Just don't say Nicky Lopez plays for either team and be all right.
No.
The audio-only listeners can't see you flipping off, man.
Yeah. If the Orioles, if they manage to get Jordan Montgomery, I would pick Baltimore to make it out of the American League.
All right,
is that fair enough? I mean, I don't want to get shit on for it, but I think if.
But all right, so since you gave me shit for waffling, though, gun to your head, though, who are you taking? Are you going with Houston or are you going with Baltimore?
As it stands right now, Houston.
Okay.
As it stands right now.
I'm going sight unseen. I don't need anything. Okay. I'm banking on the fact that the Orioles are going to do what it takes to get it done. I'm taking the Orioles right now, coming out of the AO.
Because I think if the Orioles do make a move and get Jordan Montgomery, I think they're already the best team in the American League East already. And I think the American League East is the best division in the American League. But I just think with what you've seen from Houston, and they're like the freaking Kansas City Chiefs. God, sure,
I was going to say, they have the pedigree.
Yeah.
It's old.
But I think in addition, like a Jordan Montgomery to that rotation, oh my God, that changes everything. And I think that will push them over the top. But as it stands right now, sight unseen, like you said, I'm going with Houston just because of, you know, what I said before.
Cool. We'll go to the National League, and I'm going first. I'm going Homer. Atlanta's got to get it done. They have got to get past Philadelphia. And I think once you get past that situation, excise those demons, and get back over that hump, that they will finally make good on the fact that the last 2 years they were – at worst, the second best team overall in baseball, and go on ahead and get it done. I'm picking. My World Series prediction is Baltimore against Atlanta.
I've got Atlanta as well. And cool. I'm not saying that to kiss your ass. I just think overall, I think they're the hands down. They're the. I mean,
and you know who played for Atlanta last year?
A lot of people.
Nicky Lopez. And I'm being dead serious about that. We had Nicky Lopez. That's why I knew where he was.
I don't have to lose my shit, man. I'm trying to stay composed. I'm trying.
Oh, you want to give your reasons? You want to give your reasons for Atlanta, or should I give mine? You go ahead and give yours.
They're good, Scott. That's what it comes down to. They're a really good baseball
team. Oh, come on.
They've got pitching.
What else do they have? They're not just good. Go into detail. Tell me why Atlanta's your National League champ.
Well, they.
How great are we?
Yeah. Please tell me. Pump my tires. That's what I want. Pump my tires, please. God. Oh, no, in all seriousness, they've got, I mean, the lineup overall, like I said, when you've got Ronald Acuna Jr., when you got Matt Olson, I mean, they're top to bottom. They are just really freaking good. And then you have Spencer Strider on top of that. And then, like we were saying, the addition of Chris Sale, that is an underrated addition to that team. And that's one that is going to, I think, really, you know, thrust them into the World Series. A move like that, again, so underrated, but can really add a lot to a team that already is loaded. So, I mean, in all seriousness, I don't have really much to say. You're going to go into it a lot more detail than me. I'm just going to ride your coattails on it because I agree. But, I mean, overall, they were the best team last year. They ran into a Phillies team that was, you know, again, they got hot at the right time again. And unfortunately, you know, they couldn't get it done. But still, I like the Braves. I've got nothing against them. You know, chop on, baby. That's what I'm saying. So it's, you know, I just think at this point in time, I think their time is now with everything they've done. And again, plus you got a GM and Alex Anthopoulos. That dude could give a shit. I think at this point in time, that loss to Philadelphia last year, that ticked a lot of people off in Atlanta. And I think that's going to – that it's simply not going to happen again. And AA is going to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, well, I honestly don't need to go into too much detail. You know the resume, everything that's happened over the last
couple of years. That freaking good, yeah.
Yeah, more or less. I mean, I don't know what you want me to say. All those wins last year, historic offense, just ran into the wrong team at the wrong time again. And you know what? And maybe Philadelphia has this team's number. Maybe they just stack up so well against them. It's so weird because in the regular season, Atlanta has not dominated, but they've won the season series pretty handily the last couple of years. So running into the team in the playoffs has seemed so weird that all of a sudden Philadelphia is able to turn the tables. But at some point, again, the talent will take over. And I think that third time's the charm. They know the pressures, they're starting to feel the pressure, but I don't think that this group is going to crack after a good majority of the base having already won the World Series a couple years ago. They know what needs to get done. So it's time to go out and do it. As long as the only thing stopping Atlanta is health. That's the only thing that I think could get in Atlanta's way of making it back to the World Series is if the injury bug strikes and they're never able to overcome it. So I have Atlanta and Baltimore in the World Series. You have Atlanta and Houston. Would you like to tell me who's going to win that 21 rematch?
The A. For the A. For the A. I think it's their year.
Yeah, I can't.
I mean, in all seriousness, I'm not saying that to kiss your ass or anything like that. No, I think.
And I'm not. And I'm not just saying it's just
to kiss your own ass.
Wild, a wild homer. It's you can't go wrong with picking the team that, outside of the Dodgers, is easily the best team in baseball on paper. Games still have to be played, and the Dodgers are still going to have to be dealt with, but. I have Atlanta finally getting back over that hump after a 3-year absence, which is hilarious to think. As long as I waited to see
you that spoiled ass
that World Series trophy get back to Atlanta. Matt chiming in that he has Baltimore and the Dodgers. He says bust out the crab chips. The Orioles are taking it. So He has the Orioles making it and winning it. And Rex saying that his dream prediction is that it's going to be the Guardians versus the Braves with the Guardians in 7. So a little 1995 World Series rematch with the Guardians coming out ahead this time. So I guess we'll see about that. I like the Braves' chances if they play the Guardians.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Me too. That won't even be close. That'd be a boat racing as
well. But Rex says that in reality, he's got the Dodgers and Astros because he wants to see Ohtani win one. You want to bet on that? You want to bet on that, Rex?
I see what you did there. I like that.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
That's good. Tip of the cap to you.
Speaking of tip of the cap, can we highlight before we get out of here your Dairy Dandies hat?
Yes.
Come on, baby.
The Danville Dairy Daddies. Finally.
That is sweet.
Yes. I got milked the other day when this arrived, so that was awesome.
Well, we don't need to do it to June outside of the podcast. That's gross.
Whoa. Hey, whoa.
This is a family show. We don't need to hear
about that. Oh, is it now?
You getting milked.
Oh, geez. Yeah. God. Oh, man. So, well, real quick before we wrap it up, a little brushback segment, a segment where something has this, a little flustered to where you want to chuck it at a batter. Do you have anything?
I do not. It's all your. The stage is all yours, my friend. Okay. There's no virtually created women taking over MLB the Show this week for me to get all upset about. So you go right ahead.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Well, I'm going to go to the world of NCAA baseball, where guys have been getting the hook left and right for over celebrations. Now we have seen a few guys, the latest happening in Georgia, Georgia Bulldogs, where you hit a walk-off home run, you bat flip, throw your helmet in celebration, boom, you get yanked. Absolutely ridiculous. This is something to where the game of baseball overall, we talk about where, the old school baseball fan doesn't like, fun. That's kind of what we're seeing here in college baseball right now. The NCAA has told umpires to crack down on that. Now you're seeing guys. I mean, dude, if I hit one, if I tank one here, I'm going to be jacked up, especially to win a game. I mean, let these guys celebrate.
Let the kids play.
Yes, and that's what it's all about. I mean, in the KBO, bad flips are a thing. Like, if you're not bad flipping, you're doing it all wrong. Celebrate it. You hit a home run, and if you hit a dong to win the game, to walk it off, celebrate the crap out of it. Again, as long as you're not showing up the other team and looking at them and, screaming at them, enjoy it. And now, again, you're seeing these guys get ejected for it. Come on. That's got to change. NCAA is, NCAA overall can't get out of their own way. And now you're adding this on top of it. Again, it's absolutely ridiculous. And, we bitch and moan about Major League Baseball. doing the same thing, being, you know, with the fun police and everything like that, and cracking down on some of the fun. Come on. Now we're seeing it in NCAA baseball. Not going to happen. It's got to get taken care of because it's ridiculous. You hit a walk-off home run, you deserve to celebrate the crap out of it. And it's just, again, these umpires, again, they're being put in a bad spot because the NCAA is cracking down on it. This is where the NCAA has to get out of their own way and let it happen. Again, like Scott said, let the boys play. Let them play. So that's where I've got. I could have got a little more mad, but I chose not to.
You held back.
I did, because I was listening to it on my way home today, and I was listening to another show, and I was just like, man, I was getting pissed in the car, and I was like, I better stop.
Didn't want to Hulk out.
I thought about it. I already had a rough commute on the way home. So the guy who was following me, who saw me, you know, dish out 15 middle fingers to him on Union Center. Yeah. that was the majority of my car ride home. So I figured I'd tone it down a little bit here and you know, take it easy.
Well, so. thank you for the calm version, but I think that's going to do it for us.
Yeah. I think it will.
Again, Chris, we got baseball this week, my man. The games count. Just 2 days away from the start of the regular season, my man. It's our favorite time of year. And if you love baseball like us, continue to check out the Backwards K Baseball Show here on the Kraft Brewed Sports Network. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, on the Impact Sports Cincinnati website, as well as Kraft Brewed Sports, and wherever you find all of your podcasts. For Chris, I am Scott. We appreciate you joining us. Enjoy baseball, folks. Ignore all the noise surrounding Ohtani. And let's go Braves. We'll see you next week. Peace.